1, 2, 3, 4.
Y'all ready for this?
Ladies and gentlemen.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 0.
Never been done before.
We're talking about a subject.
To bring you to the light.
Farewell to you, people.
According to the New York Times, more than 500 women are currently suing a Virginia health system and its senior executives, claiming that for nearly a decade, one doctor performed medically unjustified operations, including unnecessary C-sections and sterilizations without consent. The 510 plaintiffs are seeking $10 million each from the Chesapeake Regional Medical Center, where the former gynecologist Javaid Purways worked. He's currently serving a 59-year prison sentence for Medicaid fraud stemming from those unnecessary operations. Moving down south into Texas, Black women in Harris County are dying during and after pregnancy at higher rates than any other racial or ethnic group, according to a 2024 report from the Harris County Public Health Department. That report found that between 2016 and 2020, Black non-Hispanic women had a pregnancy-related death rate of 83.4 deaths per 100,000 live births, the highest rate recorded in the county. Here to speak with me now regarding the current state of Black maternal health are Raina Granberry, Director of Maternal and Reproductive Health for the California Black Women's Health Project, and Rashaw Tahani Lawler, a certified professional midwife, licensed midwife, and program manager at the Black Infant Health Program in West Oakland. Thank you all so much for being on Hard Knock today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you. So, what is going on? This sounds horrific. And when I first heard about what was happening in Virginia, the first thing that came to my mind was Mother Fannie Lou Hamer talking about how she had received, like so many Black women in Mississippi in the 60s, what they call a Mississippi appendectomy, that you go into the hospital as a Black woman for one thing and you come out having had a hysterectomy. It didn't matter what you went in the hospital for. You could have went in for a toothache, but you came out missing your uterus, missing your womb. So this is obviously still going on.
It is still going on. And in some instances, and I hate that I cannot remember her name right now, but a very respected New York Times journalist reported that in some instances, we are doing worse in maternal and reproductive health than we did for Black folks 1 year after slavery was abolished. And so, yes, it's still going on. And I am glad that you mentioned, you know, Mother Lou Hamer, because, you know, you have to, and a lot of people know this story, but you really have to just rewind to the beginning, to the founding of gynecology in this country. If we think about some of the things that happened to the women in Virginia, one woman claimed that doctor that you mentioned, I think the woman's name is Dracena, or if I'm pronouncing it right, she claimed she got, or she did get, induced labor, tube tying without consent, an abdominal surgery because he said that she had fibroids and stomach cancer. And it immediately put me back to, you know, the mothers of gynecology, Lucy, Anarka, and Betsy, who were experimented on in that way, given multiple surgeries without consent. And it just blows my mind that we are back to that place where we're hearing the same stories as those people say women, but those women that were experimented on by the so-called father of gynecology, they were teenagers. Those were not women, those were teen girls. And here we are again in this present moment. So yeah, we are still here.
Yeah, I was going to say, are we back to that or have we ever left?
We never left. We never left. Mm-hmm. And in my own experience, I am a fourth generation Black midwife, and my own, the midwives in my own family experienced trauma in their reproductive history and their reproductive experiences, and they were midwives in hospitals. My Aunt Althea had a premature birth and her baby died. This was a viable, healthy pregnancy, and she was a midwife and couldn't be kept safe from the statistics. And, you know, this is, I was a teenager, not even a teenager, a child hearing this story, and found myself 25 years later, and the statistics are worse.
Okay, so Rashaa, you telling me that story, how could I forget? I almost forget. Forgive the oversight. Most recently, Dr. Janelle Green Smith, 31-year-old Black nurse midwife and maternal health advocate from South Carolina, who died January 1st of this year from complications following an emergency C-section.
Mm-hmm.
Despite her expertise, and she was known as being an advocate for Black mothers, for Black maternal health, she succumbed to severe preeclampsia and a ruptured incision site, highlighting the severe racial disparities in U.S. maternal mortality.
And what's heartbreaking is that this is a story that keeps being repeated over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
We have not only Dr. Janelle Smith, but we also have Dr. Shanice Wallace. We have Shalana Irving, who was she worked at the CDC. These are Black women, highly educated, working to fight against the very thing that they died from. Mm-hmm. And so we know that this is a continuation of what's been happening since Black midwives were removed as a part of the healthcare system in keeping Black people safe.
Mm. But the other thing that came to my mind when I heard about this case out of Virginia, at one point, you know, Virginia was the capital of the Confederacy.
Mm-hmm.
And at another point, it was through Virginia that we got what is called the condition of the mother equals the condition of the child, which stated during the times of enslavement, if the woman was enslaved, then the child was enslaved. If the woman was quote unquote free, then mm-hmm. the child would be free. And mm-hmm. so I'm just wondering about this Confederacy, neo-Confederacy, Deep South connection, or maybe it's not a connection. You, Raina, are here in California, the Black Women's Health Project, California Black Women's Health Project. Rashaa, you are also here in California and working in West Oakland. Mm-hmm. Is it a Confederate thing or just a Black folk in America thing?
Listen, the Confederacy is worldwide.
Okay. Well, that's
worldwide. We on the West Side, but the Confederacy is worldwide. And I often have to tell my sisters, my siblings, and my colleagues, because they say, oh, you're in California. And I have to remind them that, yes, I will not, you know, take away from anything from the fights that happened in the South, but I have the same conversation. I talk to the same racist elected officials, the same racist doctors in hospitals mm-hmm. all the time. So mm-hmm. California, you know, has a pretty facade. I like to say, like, we put a little bow on top of our racism that mm-hmm. makes people think that we don't have the exact same thing going on. So yes, I would say, you know, that slavery, the lineage of like this medical racism is embedded in the Confederacy and lives in the Deep South, but it traveled and it is here in California.
And we know that specifically out of Los Angeles, I am the great grandchild of those that left the South looking for a better life, looking for safer experience in their, you know, growing their families and their childbearing, were coming to Los Angeles, the Great Migration. My grandparents were a part of that. And so what that means is they brought with them a lot of the things that they had been trying to escape, and then only to find that it was here as well. So they brought with them an understanding of how to keep themselves safe and how to heal and how to take care of each other. But what they found when they got here is that it wasn't much better. My grandmother worked at segregated hospitals in California when she came here from the South. So absolutely, it is worldwide. It is nationwide. It is definitely polite in California. My time and my experience in Virginia from 2022 to 2025 was that, the racism is just up front. It's just blunt. It's right in your face. It's not polite at all. It's very much just expected, and you're expected to tolerate it. And the injustices that Black bodies face in the South, it's just accepted, unfortunately, many times as just, that's just what it is. That's how it's always been. And the folks that are doing the work of, you know, fighting back and educating and, you know, filing lawsuits and speaking out, they're a small, small number versus the millions that have been on, you know, the wrong side of the scalpel, as I like to say.
Mm-hmm. I'm speaking with Raina Granberry, Director of Maternal and Reproductive Health for the California Black Women's Health Project, and Rashaw Tahani Lawler, Certified Professional Midwife, Licensed Midwife, and Program Manager at the Black Infant Health Program in West Oakland. My name is Tonda Seasway Shimaringa, sitting in for Davey D here on Hard Knock Radio. Rashaw, real quick, what is a midwife? What is a certified professional midwife? What is a licensed midwife? And what is a doula?
I'm going to answer all those and add one. So we have our traditional midwives, which are those that went through training either with someone who was an elder midwife, someone who is an educator of midwifery, or someone who's just been practicing midwifery for a long time. Maybe they even went to school that was specific for midwifery, whether it was virtual, in person, you know, in the country, out of the country. When someone decides in the state of California, or excuse me, not in the state of California, in the United States, to become a certified professional midwife, it means that we've attended school that was approved by the North American Registry of Midwives. So a recognized organization in North America where you have to go to a credentialed school, an approved school, complete your education, and then sit for their board exam. And many states uphold that same exam as their licensing exam. So you can sit for that exam in any state, but not every state recognizes it. So you may sit for it in South Carolina specifically and receive your certified professional midwife credentials living in South Carolina, but you will not be recognized as a certified professional midwife or a licensed midwife, because in Southern South Carolina specifically, they only recognize nurse midwives. So there are nurse midwives, and Dr. Janelle Smith was a doctor of nursing. She was a certified nurse midwife, meaning she had gone to school for many, many years as a nurse to then become a midwife, which was probably her master's, and then became a doctorate of nursing, which was how she is titled, Dr. Janelle Smith Green. So then we have certified midwives, and in New York, they recognize those midwives. They are people that they could have had a degree in anything, a bachelor's in anything, but they did a master's program in midwifery. And sometimes it's in the hospital, sometimes it's with midwives in the community, birth centers, home birth midwives, but they're usually nurse midwives. And so the state of New York recognizes certified midwives. The state of Virginia recognizes certified midwives, certified nurse midwives, certified professional midwives, and licensed midwives. We do have some states still that do not recognize any type of midwife. Licensed midwives, again, midwives who receive their certification as a professional midwife, and then their state recognized that and allowed them to be licensed. California is unique because we are licensed through the medical board. So we're in the same board as doctors. without any of the respect. And the nurses here in California that are nurse midwives, they're on a nursing board. And so we're kind of, I like to say, unfortunately, the medical afterthought. Like, oh yeah, we recognize, you know, you do reproductive health care, you do perinatal care. Here's your credential, but you absolutely, as licensed midwives, may not work in a hospital. You may not work in a birth center with doctors and nurse midwives. You stay out there in your home birth streets, and you can have a birth center if you like, but, you know, stay over there. There are some nurse midwives that work with licensed midwives and allow them to work in their birth centers. But for the most part, nurse midwives usually work in hospitals. They are provided a certain amount of privilege in hospitals and will work in birth centers and some home births. But certified professional midwives and licensed midwives are home birth midwives only and birth center midwives only, usually. Mm-hmm. And then doulas are labor support. They are birth support. They are abortion support. They are loss support. They are the what previously positions held by people in your community that showed up to support you when you were going through your reproductive health journey. And unfortunately, so many of us don't have those folks in our lives that can just show up in that way for free 99. And so in the 90s, white women actually decided to commodify it. They were like, we're going to call ourselves doulas, which is the Greek word for slave. And I always like to remind people that words mean things. We can definitely make words mean new things, but that is the origin. And they believed, you know, that they were doing this duty of being in support of birthing people, birthing women specifically. And so they gave themselves the title doula and created all these certifications and educational systems. And that word became the primary word used for people who show up and support you during your reproductive health journey. So the person that holds your hand when you have to terminate your pregnancy, whether it's because of a health issue or because of, you know, what you have going on in your life, or someone who is experiencing loss in the hospital, someone who is giving birth and doesn't have adequate support. And their support is emotional, physical, psychological. They are not clinicians. They are not trying to be your clinician. They are literally there for the support that previously was held by, you know, a loved one in your family. So that was a very long rundown of all the different roles in reproductive health care with midwives and doulas.
Mm-hmm. And if I could add just a little bit about doulas, because I also am a doula, and a birth support person, I often say, for the reason that Rashad mentioned. Mm-hmm. There's also like a lot of education and advocacy, because, you know, and we hear doctors and sometimes nurses too, but doctors a lot of times reduce doula to rubbing backs, like they're there to rub backs and make it absolutely all about not emotional, but there's a really large education and advocacy portion. Mm-hmm. And like the last birth that I just supported, you know, there's a lot of questions that you have that a lot of times the clinicians will not fully explain, don't have the time to explain. I know, you know, a lot of time doctors and even, you know, the nurse midwives can get a bad rap about how quickly they move in and out. Sometimes they're under the same oppressive systems that we are, you know, and they have to move quickly and things like that. So in an instance when, you know, your doctor comes in and says a term really fast, like preeclampsia, and runs out, you know, you have your doula there to explain what preeclampsia is, explain what some of the things you can do, you know, around preeclampsia, around, you know, what are some of the warning signs of, you know, all of these different things that can happen to you while you're pregnant, after you've had your baby. So, yeah, so there's a large portion there. And sometimes they will have to advocate for you. We always make sure to train doulas to never overstep, make sure they're speaking on behalf. But sometimes you just don't have that voice. So if I have your birth plan, and, you know, you feel all beat down and you can't remember what those things were that you wanted your birth experience to be, then we can be that voice to, you know, remind the medical staff that, hey, this is what she wanted, you know, just a little nudge. So
just absolutely. That. No, that's huge. Thank you for saying that.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Speaking with Raina Granberry, Director of Maternal and Reproductive Health for the California Black Women's Health Project, and Rashad Tahani Lawler, certified professional midwife, licensed midwife, program manager at the Black Infant Health Program in West Oakland, California. I want to do so many things. Let me go back real quick. This report out of Harris County, Texas, the report was based upon information gathered from 2016 to 2020. Not quite sure why it's just now being reported on, but okay. I took a statistics class. As a journalist, I need to know statistics. I'm not going to lie. I did get an A in the class, but I have no idea what the heck is going on. So maybe you can explain this for me, because I'm not really that good at math. 83.4 deaths per 100,000 live births. That is the pregnancy-related death rate of Black women in Harris County, Texas. Harris County is Houston and the surrounding area. That's said to be the highest rate recorded in the county. 100,000, that's a lot of people. 100,000, you know, in my simple mind, that's a lot of people. 85 deaths per 100,000. Can either of you explain to me why that is so alarming?
I'm happy to. I'm happy to. You know, I could pass to my sis, but I'm happy to. So you said 83. What was the number again?
83.4 deaths per 100,000.
Okay. So what I can tell you that in the United States, Black women's maternal mortality rate is 50.3 per 100,000, and that's terrible. So if 50.3 per 100,000, and you've got, and if you're doing worse than the entire nation, that is astounding. And so one thing we have to remember, I think we've gotten so accustomed to hearing about maternal deaths. Healthy women, healthy people should not be dying delivering their babies. Mm. So I think, you know, if we have to start to rethink, you know, why do we think that, you know, why do we think that it's okay for people to be dying? Healthy folks or just people in general during birth. It should not be that way. And so, and I'll also say, if 50.3 per 100,000 in the nation means that Black women and folks are 3.5 times more likely to die than any other racial, you know, racial group, then what does 80 mean? That's that's like four times, right?
Almost double.
So exactly. So now you can understand that that is an insane rate. That's over four times. That means in that county, Black women are dying at four times higher than all of their peers.
Dying to give birth.
Yes. So my sis said it so scientifically and politically and all the right ways correctly. And I am like over here silently standing ovation. And now I'm going to say the quiet part out loud. If these numbers were white women, it'd have been fixed. It'd have been fixed in 5 years. It'd have been fixed in 3 years. But it's because it's Black bodies, because it's Black people giving birth, that is like, oh, we're working on it. Oh, we're fundraising. Oh, we're gonna educate the doctors. We're gonna educate the nurses. Oh, well, we're gonna have this training or we're gonna have this in service. But if the numbers were white bodies, then it would be like, oh, this is a pandemic. This is an epidemic. It would be all the things. There would be a whole entire society association to the ending of white maternal death statistics.
All hands on deck.
All hands on deck. It would be a national crisis. It would be we're going to shut this down. We're not going to let this happen anymore. But because it's Black bodies, we're going to get to it, which is why for however many years any of us have been doing this work, it hasn't gotten better. And that's the part that will make you literally just feel like you're running into a wall over and over and over again, but still committed to like, well, but if one person cannot lose their life in this, in their giving birth, in their being pregnant. The statistic also includes the first year postpartum. So this is not, this isn't, the conversation is not even addressing the folks that are dying after they've left the hospital and they're 6 weeks out, they're 6 months out, they're 8 months out. The coroner can put down it was a maternal death if it happens within the first year of giving birth.
You have led me into the next area I wanted to ask both of your thoughts on. So we are more than 20 years into the 21st century. You know, my math is bad. I think that's correct. We have seen the attack on women's bodily autonomy, specifically reproductive health in the area of the right to abortion, which is a medical procedure, not a moral shortcoming.
Mm-hmm.
This attack has reached warp speed under Trump. So on the one hand, we see this push to criminalize and end abortion. Thank you, Supreme Court, which many believe is tied to a low white birth rate. On the other hand, we have this assault on the wombs of Black women. So officially, let me ask y'all, what are your thoughts on that, what I just stated?
Go ahead, Ray.
Yeah, sometimes I have to be honest with you. Sometimes where my mind went is just to talk about like what we're doing and trying to do, right? Because I get so bogged down and overwhelmed on this attack. We just finished talking about, you know, the legacy of slavery and how that, like, this is such a long, multi-century problem that I just, sometimes I can't. I can't have any more thoughts on it, you know? I just start thinking, what I begin to think about is just how do we build an infrastructure? And I appreciated the people who were talking about reparations and in a reparations fight. I think it's the CJEC, the California Justice Task Force or something like that. I'm sorry, I messed up y'all names. But I love the idea. I love the idea of how do we create an infrastructure where we can protect our folks in serving them? You know, we in the Black maternal health space, we talk a lot about midwives. And we talk a lot about how can we support Black midwives? How can we create more birth centers? Because in my mind, that's how we one step to getting our people out of those medical situations where people don't care about them, where people want to harm Black bodies. It's like we're trying to remove ourselves from the system who wants to continuously harm the Black bodies. How long do we, as Rashad said, how long do we try to educate providers, try to educate hospitals? I was just in this large program where we were trying to do hospital quality improvement. Y'all can't see me, but I'm doing a little, I'm doing the quotations, right? We're doing hospital quality improvement. And, you know, we were trying to get somewhere. It was contentious. It was rough. They didn't want to listen. But then it got to the point where the hospital association was like, we don't have to do this. Like, they got tired of the fight and they were like, why are we even talking to these community folks and these so-called Black maternal health experts? We don't have to do this. Mm-hmm. So in my mind, they never have to do it. When the going gets rough, we can't, you know, they don't have to be a part of the change in that system. So all I can think about is getting our folks out of the system into other places, giving them more options and more people to go to. I don't even know if that was the answer to your question, but when I just hear about the problem framed in that way, and we have to talk about abortion, right? Because so many Black folks, actually our organization just did a beautiful documentary called Said Out Loud that highlights multi-generational stories of Black women's abortion experiences, right? And we had people, we had a lot of support, don't get me wrong, but we had people who were afraid to come see the film. We had people who didn't want to support the film. We even had people in our organization that were a little bit, you know, they were also worried about how would this be received. And for me, that's us hustling backwards as Black folks. If we can't even talk about abortion as a part of reproductive health, like you said, a medical situation, not abortion, our situation with abortion and taking away abortion rights is also contributing to the Black maternal health crisis. Mm-hmm. So for those Black people out there who don't want to talk about abortion or want to demonize abortion, they need to know that they are contributing to those Black babies dying that they so say they care about and want to have here.
Well, now, I remember this entire public relations campaign that talked about abortion was leading to Black genocide, that The most dangerous place for a Black child is in the womb because of the specter of abortion. And now here you come saying the opposite.
I am saying the opposite, because in reproductive justice, we do not feel like we own anybody's bodies. People still have to have the choice to have a baby or not have a baby. They are going to have that choice and make that choice whether or not we support it or not, whether or not we give them the rights or not. People are going to figure out how to do what they need to do for their lives and for their health. So what we're saying is, if we respect Black bodies, we love Black women and people who have babies, we mm-hmm. have to respect their choices along the journey. The majority of people who have abortions already have children. So this is mm-hmm. not a children killing campaign. This is people making decisions that they need to make at that time for themselves. So all I'm saying is, when we create these barriers around whatever people want to do along the reproductive justice journey, we hurt them if and when they want to have children.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Rashad, did you have any thoughts on?
I'm over here standing silent, clapping again. I mean, this is the thing. We all are saying the same things. I am unapologetically a Black midwife. Always have been. Black folks to the front of the line for whatever it is you need, for whatever it is I can do for you. And if I can't do it, I'm going to facilitate my community partners, the community stakeholders that say that they believe in what it is that we're doing to help you get what you need and what you want in order for you to feel safe, in order for you to have the outcome that you desire, whatever it may be. Pregnancy, not being pregnant, not wanting to be pregnant, you know, whatever it is. And what is so beautiful is that those of us that choose to operate outside of the medical industrial complex is that when it works beautifully. Meaning when midwives can be paid for the care that they provide outside of hospital settings, for families, for individuals outside of hospital settings, and everything goes well and everything is paid for and everybody is receiving what they need, the provider, the midwife, and then the participant, the patient, the client, then it's beautiful and it's amazing. But what we know is that it is not a coincidence that the statistics are what they are. There are actual whole entire organizations committed to our statistics staying what they are and actively working against us. So that is why you don't see, you know, a great reimbursement through Medi-Cal for home birth midwives.
Hmm.
You don't see it. And when we do manage to get a little something back, it is not livable. It puts us in the same place as the folks that we're serving. So if I need Medi-Cal and you need Medi-Cal and you paying me, I'm getting paid by your Medi-Cal to pay me and I need to be on Medi-Cal too, we're doing it wrong. Mm. It's not working. It's not working. And then, you know, the insult to injury, say you are a midwife that can afford to be a Medi-Cal provider, to provide access for people to have your services. The reimbursement rate is under $3,000 for 10 months worth of care, including your birth, including your postpartum, the care of your baby. And if you have to take that family to the hospital because they need to go, not because, you know, oh, I just don't want to do their birth anymore, or oh, they want an epidural, whatever the reason, actually, that you have to take them to the hospital, you get zero reimbursement. It's, oh, well, now we have to pay the hospital. So you don't get paid for any of the work that you did. So what would make a midwife say, oh yeah, I want to be a Medi-Cal provider. That sounds great. Let me sign up for that. So is all of these systems being put in place that look like they're going to help, but then they don't? Or there's systems that are blatantly in place to keep our families from our communities from getting the care that they need. I love the idea, the concept of birth centers in every city run by licensed midwives, certified professional midwives, and supported by birth workers, doulas, folks that identify as support systems of the reproductive health journey, and it all being paid for by insurance, it all being covered and not an out-of-pocket experience. Mm-hmm. And what we would see is an immediate shift in those Black maternal health numbers. in the numbers of, you know, wanted pregnancies versus unwanted pregnancies, planned pregnancies versus unplanned pregnancies. Because like Raina said, they're now receiving education. They're now receiving support in a place and a space that's for them, for us, by us. And then also no one's having to come out of pocket, and the folks providing the care are being compensated in such a way that they can actually pay their bills and take care of their own families. Mm-hmm. But where have we ever seen that for Black people and it not be destroyed, literally destroyed? Where have we seen it where it's been successful and it's blossomed and bloomed and gone on to be something that continues on for ages and ages and ages? We haven't. Because there's always a bigger system working against us. And so where we make the most impact is our small groups working together, our small communities working together, and the organizations that are willing to, you know, show up and either fundraise or finance or support stakeholders, community stakeholders. This is where we see the greatest outcomes and the best statistics, is where we have funding so that these families and these midwives are taken care of.
Rasha, I interviewed you several years ago for the LA Sentinel newspaper. Mm-hmm. It may have been the LA Watch Times newspaper. I don't remember anymore. But I seem to remember you mentioning that a lot of C-sections, cesarean sections, are not necessary, mm-hmm. and that women, mainly Black women, were being pushed into that. Mm-hmm. And then we have this case of this doctor in Virginia who mm-hmm. is not only doing hysterectomies without consent, mm-hmm. he's doing C-sections, and they were not necessary. Mm-hmm. What do you mean when you say that a cesarean section, a C-section, is not necessary?
Whew. So I'm gonna answer it from the lens of an out-of-hospital midwife. So okay. I'm gonna say that first. So out-of-hospital midwives, in the state of California, we are told how long we're able to support someone in pregnancy. In the state of California, the cutoff is 42 weeks. At 42 weeks, if you are not active pushing out your baby, you have to be at the hospital receiving hospital support in your birthing. Now, prior to 2014, it was more like, okay, well, as long as a doctor is willing to sign off on, you know, how long you've been in labor, or, you know, how long you've been pregnant, or you get the appropriate scans, they're called non-stress tests, where they're basically checking to make sure, you know, the baby's got plenty of amniotic fluid, the placenta is functioning well, you know, the baby looks healthy, looks fine. That was a tool that was used to allow families, and I'm saying allow in air quotes, to continue to be pregnant and under the care of a midwife beyond 42 weeks. Mm-hmm. What has happened is that now there is so much fear and there's so much legal lawyers involved in the birthing process, in the perinatal care process, in the hospital setting, that the hospital is going to do everything in their power to keep themselves from being sued. And so their lawyer is going to say, well, what do you even need to be pregnant beyond 40 weeks for? Well, that's pointless. And what we know is, just like everyone doesn't bleed every 30 days, some people bleed every 18 days, some people bleed every 28 days, some people bleed every 38 days. Everyone's all over the spectrum. No one wants to think about, what if it's the same in pregnancy? What if some people gestate their babies a little bit longer than everybody else? What if some people don't gestate their babies as long as everyone else? We've heard stories of folks being pregnant, you know, in the spring, and we're going to have a baby in the winter. That's how midwives used to calculate pregnancy and birth. Mm-hmm. And so once it became this cutoff of 42 weeks for home birth midwives in the hospital, We know it's pretty common for people to be induced a week after their 40 weeks. You're 41 weeks, we need to induce you. And the first thing they say is, your baby could die. Well, nobody wants their baby to die. So they're willing to do whatever. Okay, well, I guess I'll get induced then. This is where their doula, if they have one, or their midwife, if they have one, has already been educating them about all of the things that I just said. Well, you know, you might need to gestate your baby longer. Your baby might need more time. Well, there's all these different tests that doctors can do to make sure that you have plenty of amniotic fluid, that your placenta is functioning well in supporting your baby gestating for longer than 40 weeks. But what the hospital says is, your baby could die, we should induce you. And so most people say, all right, fine, induce me. Well, what happens in the induction process is that you're forcing the body to do something that it's not ready to do yet. And so if you are forcing the body to have contractions, you're forcing the baby to engage in the body in the process of giving birth, and the baby's not ready to go through the birthing process. You're forcing it all the way along. And sometimes the bodies are responsive and receptive and say, all right, this is what you want me to do. Okay, cool. And a baby comes out vaginally. We have a quote unquote natural birth. But a lot of the times it's the baby being like, what are you doing? Why is this happening? And the body going, what is this? Why is this happening? Why are we doing this? And then on top of whatever fear is inside of that person, adrenaline works against oxytocin, and oxytocin is the hormone we need to get babies out of our bodies. So if those two are fighting, a synthetic external oxytocin that's being provided to induce the labor, and then the internal adrenal system of the fight or flight or fear, of course the baby's not coming out. They're not coming out. And so then the response is, oh, we need a C-section. Or the baby having a very difficult time with this induction of labor, and then there's a C-section that needs to happen because now we have to save the baby. Well, we have to save the baby from the circumstances that you created. Mm-hmm. So we have this repeating of this over and over and over again. And then it's like, oh, we have all these C-sections. I can tell you in the last 60 days, I have had participants in my program whose babies literally fell out in their previous pregnancies. Girl, we barely made it to the hospital. Oh, girl, we had the baby at the birth center in the doorway. And for whatever reason, this time around, have to go the hospital route. And more than 60% of my folks who had previously had natural childbirth had inductions, because they were beyond 41 weeks and were given C-sections because the baby was quote unquote crashing. And so that's what I mean when I say unnecessary C-section. Now that's from a home birth midwife's perspective. Someone in the hospital will say, well, they needed that C-section because the baby was crashing, but not look at the origin. You created circumstances that required for this baby to now be cut out and put their parent at risk of all of the complications that come with surgery that was probably completely unnecessary.
Now, can I talk about some of the malicious side? Because my sister broke that down so beautifully and I think thoughtfully about how that happens, how that can happen in a hospital. You know, we create these emergencies and we see it all the time. C-sections are not the only unnecessary medical interventions that they do. I want to talk about the maliciousness parts too, because you talked about Dr. P, right? The one who's in jail right now for 59 years. I hope it's cold. I hope he's hungry. I hope he's having a horrible time. The maliciousness piece is that, like, some of the women testified that, and people in the hospital, that it was specifically on Saturdays because homeboy was trying to go home. Like, I just don't want to be here. It's the weekend. Everybody's getting a C-section because I need to go home. That, I mean, it's sometimes it's just that bad. Also, there has also been proof and studies that indicate that financial incentives from healthcare, you know, people do get incentivized because they get higher profits for more surgery. So it can drive up the rates of C-sections if the hospital is being incentivized or if doctors are being incentivized. So, you know, I love that we get to have this very clear, comprehensive picture, because I always do want to say, we don't want people just so fearful of any medical interventions, right? So I really appreciate how Rashad shared, you know, and because we even have some doulas, right, who always be like, don't let them give you a C-section, like, just immediately. And it's like, well, no, don't just put that in their head, because they may very well be in a situation where they have to have a C-section.
Right.
So
right.
We don't want to just say blanketly don't, but we have to, like she said, be educated. Understand that if my baby is baking, it can just bake. Like, I don't have to be induced. And that things don't have to be scheduled. We even see that sometimes clinicians are weaponizing the fear that we have. They're weaponizing the statistics that we know. And like she mentioned, you know, saying, oh, your baby could die. I've also had clients where they're like, if you don't do this, you could die. Your blood pressure is high. You could die. But like, her blood pressure is not high right now. It's not spiking. The baby is fine. The baby is calm. So let's not just tell her she could die, you know, as a fear tactic, and not let her, let's explain what could happen in a way that's just not just about death, so that she can make a decision for herself. And I don't think we have enough education about midwifery and midwives and the safety and the professionalism and the education that they have. I've had talks with people about midwives and they're like, no, I got to go to the hospital because what if something happens? And I think people need to know that midwives, they know that things happen, right? They have relationships with hospitals, relationships with doctors. They have partnerships even. So if you're a healthy person, you can absolutely see a midwife. Midwives have the best outcomes. People have the best experiences. You know, when they report experiences, we do the data, we look at it. People love being in the care of midwives and midwifery and birth centers. So please, I just want Black people to know that that is an option that they have. The hospital is not the only place where you can have your child. That's all I want to say.
I absolutely co-sign. Absolutely. Ashe, I'm in. Absolutely. Because, what I love to say, what I feel like should be a shirt, a bumper sticker, a tattoo, is midwifery predates medicine. Midwifery predates medicine. Midwives were taking care of your grandma, your great-grandma, your great-great-great-grandma, and the whole entire community. There were whole entire neighborhoods whose birth certificate had one midwife's name on it. Black midwives specifically have been foundational in keeping the Black community alive and well and healthy. And as we have gotten further and further away from close-knit community, you know, there's less of those conversations about, you know, going to the midwife when you first start bleeding and going to the midwife when you're thinking about having a baby or you want to learn about, you know, your body or just learning sexual health, sexual education, safety. And so it's foundational that we start with the education in our communities when we're talking about reproductive health, reproductive justice, that we are making sure our folks know about midwives, and that you absolutely, if you are healthy, if you have been taking good care of your body, you're not on any pharmaceuticals, you know, you don't have any problems that you know of, your first call after you tell whoever it is you need to tell that you're pregnant should be to a midwife, at least for a consultation. Hey, I don't know anything about what y'all do, but I heard this radio show and they said I should at least call you and have a little consultation. The consultations are usually free. And it's where you can hear what all of your options are from someone who is hopefully probably unbiased. So like they could sit there in the consultation and say, you know, everything I hear, you actually should have your baby in a hospital, but I'm gonna make sure that you know about Raina's organization and we get you a doula and we get you, you know, support that you need. Or they're going to say, you know what, you're an excellent candidate for a home birth. Oh, I don't want to have a baby at my house. Okay, well, let's find you a birth center. Let's find you a midwife and a birth center and you have your baby there. Okay, that's cool. Like, just people considering, Black people considering. Let me tell whoever it is I need to tell that I just peed on the stick and the stick is positive and this is what I want to do. Consider calling that midwife in your community, sending her a DM on social media, because I've definitely been hired by more than a few people in the DMs, and just saying, hey, I think maybe I want to know some more about this midwifery. I'm pregnant. I just found out I'm pregnant. Because the other piece is that you need to have enough time to establish a relationship with a midwife. It's not like the doctor's office. A midwife wants to get to know you. They want to know your cat's name. They want to know your grandma's name. They want to know what you're afraid of, what you like, what you don't like, because all of these things are what makes the care so great and makes you feel so safe and impacts how you experience not only your pregnancy, but your birthing and your postpartum. Mm-hmm. And that then impacts your outcomes. So that's my two cents.
You're listening to Hard Knock Radio on the Pacifica Network. My name is Tonda Sizwe Chimaringa, sitting in for Davey D. I've been speaking with Raina Granberry, Director of Maternal and Reproductive Health for the California Black Women's Health Project, and Rashad Tahani Lawler, Program Manager at the Black Infant Health Program in West Oakland, also a certified licensed midwife. Rashad, if Hard Knock listeners want more information on the work that you do, how can they get that?
Well, I would say I would redirect them to Black Women for Wellness. I would redirect them to Raina's organization, which I hope she's going to talk about more. Mm-hmm. I would redirect them to all of the spaces and places where Black maternal health is being spoken about in a positive light that is uplifting and upholding the sanctity of Black birthing bodies and Black bodies that do not want to birth. And go where they feel seen, go where they feel supported. You can absolutely find me on social media by my first and middle name, Rashad Tahani. But I'm at this point in my life working as an advocate, supporting programming in the maternal child health spaces that are getting laws and policy written, and supporting organizations that are already doing the work. And so my role now is to midwife organizations and midwife missions and ministries that are as dedicated as I am to our Black bodies.
In other words, leave me alone. I'm just messing with you. Raina Granberry for Hard Knock listeners who want more information on the work that you are involved in, how can they get that?
So I mentioned my org, California Black Women's Health Project. We are CABWHP.org. So you can go there. And I like what Rashad was saying. Like, you can just go to this group and that group. I think that's true, because even if you have a myriad of questions or it's not in our expertise, we can definitely just point you to the right way. So, you know, we're connected to groups statewide. We're connected to doulas statewide, abortion doulas, all types of folks statewide. So if we don't have something for you, we can point you in that way. Yes. So I think that's how they can find me.
Thank you all so much for being on Hard Knock today.
Thank you, my dear warrior sister, for having us all here today.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for allowing me to sit with you and sit with Raina and have these conversations that need to be had, especially now in not only Black folks, but also Black spaces, safe spaces. So thank you.
Hard Knock, turn the speakers in your car up. Quality program, turn in for the real talk. Don't stop. EMN at it again. Sandman, Daddy Man, Chris Juwan Kim. Yeah. Innovation, stimulating ill conversation. Anything else, just imitation. Simulation, step into the zone. The Bay Area zone. Hard Knock, radio, let's go. Big shout out to Nita and Davey D. Yeah. Honing down at Hard Knock Radio.
Hard Knock Radio.
Kinda crazy though. Oakland, stand up.
Yeah. Stand up.
Ensemble, Big Night Wolves.
Yeah. Kansas City.
Yeah.
Bellevue. Come on. Check out.
Why every novice think they hard knock when they ain't gone all in and ain't paid the cost for the fee? Hating that they made they beats, trying to eat till they ready from the steel gray beats. They bleed. Maybe they'll save you a seat at the table with a great red making. Second piece to the lovers I made with a breeze. Hey, there's some shade on your name in the street. Let's go! Hey, we're meeting Davey D.
Real Talk Radio. You and I rocking with the best in the West.
Yes, Coast.
Monday through Friday.
Sing it, Chris.
East Coast.